This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 267.
This podcast is brought to you by thenewkneeshop.com. Don't let knee pain keep you from completing your long runs or worse, sideline you altogether. An innovative new product called New Knee can help. It's designed specifically to relieve that dreaded runner's knee pain. So let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. Just go to newkneeshop.com. Use the code MTA30 for a 30% discount. Once again, that's New Knee Shop, N-U-N-E-E, shop.com, and use the code MTA30.
This episode is also sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best heated clothing, like heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and more. It's all powered by a rechargeable battery, so you get heat on demand at the touch of a button. It's perfect for anyone on your holiday gift list, and you can save 20% off your order when you go to actionheat.com/MTA. That's actionheat.com/MTA.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about making you a smarter, stronger, long-distance runner. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we discuss smart pacing strategies with Steve Walden, one of our coaches here at MTA and a 330 pacer at the New York City Marathon. And in the episode Quick Tip, we'll tell you about a handy little way to remember your mile splits in your next marathon or half marathon. And of course, you can get all of our premium content and the support of our coaches and community with an Academy membership. Find out more when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. So, Angie, you are now a master's runner.
That's right.
Yesterday was your 40th birthday. So in your four decades of life, you're like rolling your eyes at me like...
What kind of question are you going to pull out here?
No, it's a sincere question. I'm not setting you up for a joke or an old age pun or anything. So looking back on 40 years, what are some of the big moments in life that you're most proud of?
I think a lot of the things I'm really thankful for don't necessarily come down to my hard work and effort. I mean,
sure.
Things like being able to have three great kids. You know, I just feel very blessed.
That was a lot of hard work.
Well, it was hard work to carry them through pregnancy and delivery, of course, and to raise them. But I feel very blessed that I was raised in a great family and was able to have a good education and finish college. And, you know, of course, for the many friends that I've been able to meet over the years. And, of course, the great community that we have with MTA, I guess, as we go into the season of Thanksgiving here in the United States. The time of this recording, that'll be this week.
That's right.
It just, you know, helps me remember how many good things that running has brought into my life. And yeah, I think our MTA audience is one of the great things that I can be thankful for.
Just think about what the next 40 years will hold. I mean, you've already accomplished a lot and you haven't even begun yet, Angie, because I'm sure you'll live to a ripe old age. So yeah, exciting stuff. So that's what's going on here. We got a great episode for you guys today because we're talking about smart pacing strategies. I don't think we've done an episode on just pacing before. And if we have, it's been a long, long time. And we get a lot of questions about how to properly pace oneself in a race. So happy to dive into that today with someone who's an expert on it. Before we do that, we've got some shout outs to give here because people out there in MTA land are doing some awesome things. Just want to give some props and show everyone else what's possible.
That's right. We'd like to say congratulations to both Don and Nicole. They both ran their first marathons recently, so that's a great accomplishment. Also, congratulations to Megan in the Academy. She completed her first 50-miler at the JFK 50-miler, and they had some pretty snowy sections of the trail, so it sounds like some challenging conditions out there, but she did great, finished with a smile on her face, so you can't ask for more than that. And congratulations to Mitch. He reached his longtime goal of going sub-3:30 in a marathon. He got a 3-minute PR and a finishing time of 3 hours and 27 minutes.
Right on.
This email is from Catherine, and she says, "Dear Angie and Trevor, I decided this year that having run a number of half marathons and numerous shorter races, I was going to tackle the big one. I signed up via sports tours for the New York City Marathon. I trained hard and with the help of your podcast, made 99% of my training runs and stayed injury-free. Your mantra of you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life played over and over in my head, both through those long training runs and in the race itself. I finished in 4 hours, 15 minutes, and 22 seconds, and although I'd like to go below 4 hours, I'm very pleased considering my age of 46. I have proved myself that I do have what it takes. Thank you again. And that's from Catherine in England.
Well, congrats, Catherine, on tackling the big one, as you say, and running your first marathon. And that's a great finishing time, which maybe goes to show us all that if you do 99% of your training runs, it pays off.
Oh, for sure. This email comes from Arnie. He says, I began running in 2007, and with diet and exercise, I lost 140 pounds.
Wow.
I just completed my 21st marathon, and I've done over 60 shorter races, both nationally and internationally. My recent race times have slowed, so I reached out to MTA, and I followed the intermediate marathon training plan. I'm a practicing physician and an associate professor of clinical medicine at Cornell. For some reason, I was feeling somewhat ambivalent about running the New York City Marathon this year until the Monday before the race. One of my patients that day was a former Achilles International coach named Alan, who was sidelined last year because he was afflicted with lung cancer and associated brain metastases as a smoker at age 60. He underwent surgery and radiation therapy with significant success, but he was left with limited mobility, requiring crutches to walk. When I saw him, he told me that he would be walking the marathon as an Achilles athlete. He asked me if I was going to run on Sunday, and my visceral response was, "Now I am." My ambivalence turned into inspired enthusiasm. I ran strong, and the crowd support was the best ever. My 5 grandchildren cheered me on at various points along the course, and I saw my patient Alan on the Queensboro Bridge. This supercharged me and helped me complete the last 10 miles feeling inspired by my patient and the great cheers from the massive crowds on First Avenue. I completed the race over half an hour faster than last year, thanks to your training plan and the inspiration from my family and Alan.
Well, thank you, Arnie, for sharing that story. Congrats on finishing the New York City Marathon. And you know, it goes to show that if we are feeling lackluster and not very motivated, just think about all those other folks out there who have it a lot harder than we do, who are just happy to be out there giving it their all.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, good stuff.
And we'd like to say congratulations to Nadia in the Academy. She says, I did 9 loops around Central Park, participating in the Central Park 60K. It's safe to say I completed my MTA virtual half, and I also made a good dent in the podcast vault. I can finally apply for Marathon Maniacs Club 2.
Wow, that is epic, man. 60K. Congrats on that, Nadia. That is just doing loops. It takes a lot of mental toughness.
Yes, definitely.
And thank you for participating in the MTA virtual half.
This note is from Dave in the Academy. He says, today was my 61st birthday, and I celebrated it by running the Philadelphia Marathon as my first marathon.
Right on.
I also ran the 8K to complete the Independence Challenge for the extra bling. I ran well until mile 20 and power walked the last 10K. I love getting support from all of my running friends, with a special shout out to John Lepley for helping me push through. He's another MTA member who was doing the race. Thanks to Angie and Trevor for all the knowledge that you share, and special thanks to the MTA community for all the support.
What an awesome way to celebrate your 61st birthday.
I agree.
Congrats, Dave, on going the distance, and keep up the great work.
That's right. And this email is from Jenny. She says, I'm so excited to say I finished the Columbus Marathon in 3 hours and 39 minutes, far exceeding my expectations. I had signed up for the race as a way to get my life back together. I had had my first child just under 2 years ago, and after a complicated pregnancy and delivery, I suffered from postpartum depression. In addition, I fractured my spine during delivery, which caused severe pain for several months. I wasn't sure if I'd ever be able to run at the level I did prior to pregnancy, but I ended up proving myself wrong and then some. This experience has made me stronger both mentally and physically, and I finally feel like myself again. Thank you for helping to give me the confidence that I could run a marathon and change my life.
Well, thank you for sharing, Jenny. Congrats on building back after pregnancy and going on and running such a great time at the Columbus Marathon, 3:39. That's fantastic. And Angie, you know what it's like to build back to marathon level after pregnancy.
But I didn't have a fractured spine, so
yeah.
I think she had a lot more challenges to overcome than I ever did.
Well, congrats to all of you out there taking action in your goals, and it's always great to hear what folks are up to. We hope that this conversation with Coach Steve Walden will be helpful and informative about how to do pacing correctly in the marathon. And the way this came about is Steve and I did a Facebook Live video a couple days before the New York City Marathon, and the video actually got like 2,500 views, and a lot of the questions were about pacing. So I thought to myself, wow, we're onto something here. You know, let's do an episode with Steve about pacing, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have these same questions. So we're going to talk about how to pick a pace that's right for you, common mistakes people make, how to adjust your pace mid-race if things are not going well, or maybe if things are going well and you want to speed up, and how to get through the later miles, which are, you know, the toughest, as we all know. Coach Steve Walden is one of our coaches here at MTA. He's a sub 3 hour marathoner. He's done over 25 marathons. Probably need to update that number.
Right.
He's done, I think, 950 milers to 100 Ks. He's finished the Atacama Desert Crossing, which is 155 mile self-supported stage race. And we don't ask him anything about any of this. we just talk about pacing. We'll have to have him back on the podcast to talk about ultra running.
Maybe, yeah, someday. For sure.
And as you're going to hear, Steve paces the 330 group at the New York City Marathon every year. He's a great runner. He's wicked smart. And we're so glad to have him on the team, working with clients one-on-one to take their running the next level. So let's go ahead and jump into our conversation about smart pacing strategies right now. Well on my way, well on my way. Okay, we're on the call now with Coach Steve Walden, and we're talking about smart pacing. Steve, welcome back to the MTA podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks. It's great to be here again.
So the reason why this came about is you are a pacer at the New York City Marathon, and at the time of this recording, that was just a couple weeks ago. So how did your race go?
The race went really well. I think anyone who was actually in New York at the time, I think all their races were spectacular because the day itself was gorgeous. My job, of course, was to run a 3 hour and 30 minute marathon. And they asked us to actually come in about 30 seconds under the goal time so that any people in the group will actually come under the goal of 3:30. Because anyone running with a 3:30 pace doesn't want to run a 3:30 in 2 seconds. They want to run a 3:29 XX, whatever that is.
Exactly.
So they wanted me to run a 3:29:30. And I came in at 3:29:29. So I was 1 second off of the perfect race.
That's amazing. I'd say that makes you an expert. Out of curiosity, how big was the 3:30 pace group?
It depends what mile you were at.
True, yeah. Towards the end, it gets a lot sparser.
So now that the Boston qualifying standards have tightened, 3:30 has now become the open standard for women under 35. So I had a lot of women, coincidentally a lot from Boston for some reason, trying to qualify for Boston at New York in my group. So I probably started with anywhere between 70 and 80 people at the start. And mind you, there were five different 3:30 groups seated in different parts of the race.
Oh, that's
so it's a really popular group.
Yeah, wow. So 75 to 80 to start with. I mean, how many do you think were still with you around mile 26?
Oh, gosh. Mile 24 in New York is a beast. It's a 1 mile uphill. And
wow.
that's where I lose a lot of people. So I probably had at least 30 to 40 people going to mile 22, 23. At mile 24, I may have only had six people with me.
Only the 30.
Yeah, and that's actually when I tell people. So when you get to mile 24 at New York, the last couple miles are actually net downhill. And that's when I tell the people that are with me, just ditch me, go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So the reality is, the sadness of being a pacer is that I usually finish alone.
Hopefully with most people in front of you that you've
encouraged. Exactly. I encourage everyone to, you know, really turn it on the last 2 miles, because you can run a really fast final 2 miles in New York.
It's like watching your children grow up and leave the nest at 24.
It's like, thanks, bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a nice life. So let's start off with some questions about choosing an appropriate pace. A lot of people just are curious about how to establish the right goals when it comes to what pace to choose. Like, for example, Becky in the Academy says, picking a pace, how do you know what time goal is appropriate and how much do you push yourself? A lot of people get too zealous and they're like, yeah, 3:30. I've only done a 4 hour marathon, but
that sounds like a good number. Yeah. You know, this is where my coach bias comes in, right? So I think one of the best ways to really come up with, if you want to maximize your time and your training, work with someone who knows about establishing goals, because it's really hard to use an online calculator or to do one or two workouts that's going to predict what's going to happen over the course of 26.2 miles. It's kind of a cop-out for me to say it depends. But it really depends. Some people are geared toward endurance, and some people are geared toward short sprints. Some people are training 90 miles a week, and some people are training 40 miles a week, right? You have to take all of those things into consideration, and every one of those little variables will change how, you know, your marathon goal pace, really, you know, what it really is. The best way is really just to work with someone who can synthesize all those little bits of information into coming up with one goal. Now, a lot of people may not have a coach, so they may not be able to work with that. There are some rule of thumbs, which are, you know, kind of helpful. Some are not helpful. So one of the rule of thumbs that a lot of people say is you take your half marathon time, you double it, and you add 10 minutes. I find that's a horrible rule, especially for anyone doing their first marathon. They will go out way too fast. It's too aggressive. It works for the pros. It's great. It's not going to work for, you know, especially your first time marathoner, right? So take some of those with a grain of salt. The other thing I used to do actually is New York City has a really great running community, and you sort of know the people who are roughly your pace. So when I started running marathons, I would see the people who were my pace at things like the 10K and the half marathon. And I would just honestly do a little bit of Google stalking, and I would look at their how that translated to their marathon pace. And sometimes I'd even talk to them and say, hey, you know, what was your training and how were we able to establish what your goal pace was? So there's no one way of doing it. The tricky thing is that it's really hard to find.
Anything you want to add to that, Angie?
I was just going to say, yeah, a lot of times a marathon will ask you what your projected finishing time is to seed you in your corral. And especially for a first time marathoner, it can be really challenging. And like you said, they may pick too aggressive of a goal, and then they feel like they have to train at that particular pace. And like you said, end up going out too fast, really fading towards the end, and come away disillusioned with their marathon experience because it just didn't turn out the way they thought. So probably do you see that as people get some long runs under their belt, they can get more of an estimate maybe of what their marathon time is going to be? I mean, obviously those last 6.2 miles can be a big question mark. You know, if you've done a 20-mile training run, there's still another 10K to go. But with your clients, do you find that as you get closer to that marathon and they have a few long runs under their belt, you're able to kind of dial in maybe their goal marathon pace a bit better?
Yeah, 100%. That's actually a really good question, because that's one of the things that I do with a lot of my clients, especially those who have a very specific goal time. Maybe it's to BQ, maybe it's to PR, is we will start increasing the number of marathon miles that we do in a long run. And that will sometimes culminate into something as big as a 20-mile run with about 14 miles at marathon pace. And if you could do something like that, which is a pretty big run, if you could do something like that, you know, without tapering, in the middle of an intense, you know, marathon training cycle, then that's one of the indicators that we use that, okay, you've got the mental and physical fortitude to really go for that as your goal. You know, and furthering that a little bit, I think this is the larger point of sort of using your long runs as, you know, an experiment every time you go out. You know, a lot of people use it for fueling and that kind of thing, but it should also be used to sort of check in with yourself. Like, how does this pace feel for 12, 16, 18, 20 miles? Like, is this sustainable? What's going to happen over the last 10K?
Yeah, that's a good point. We've kind of touched on some of the mistakes that we see people make maybe in choosing their pace and pacing during a marathon. Maybe kind of touch on some of those. What are some of the mistakes that you see people making?
Going out too fast.
I think everyone, I'm pretty sure 95% of your listeners who have finished a marathon are thinking, oh God, I've gone out too fast before. That's a mistake, but it's not that big of a one. If you catch yourself in the first half mile or so, and you back off, you haven't done that much damage, right? So it's kind of like part one, part two of this mistake. The first part is just getting too excited, and you go out and you just get caught up in all that energy. That's fine. It's natural. The biggest part of the mistake is that if you don't catch yourself, if you end up, for whatever reason, committing to that pace, like, no, this is the day. I'm going to run sub 3, but I've never even run a 1:30 half. Like, I'm going to do it today. And it's like, okay, I'll see you at mile 16. Let me know how you feel.
Going to get handed a piano.
Yeah.
So if you can rein yourself back, maybe in the first couple of miles, there's probably not too much damage done. Is that what you're saying, maybe?
Yeah, and I really think, yeah, you can go out a little bit too fast in the first, I like to say mile preferably, because I think that it gets harder to rein yourself in the further you go out. You get a little bit more physically committed to that pace. But I think that, you know, obviously the most important thing is establishing what that pace should be to begin with so that you know whether or not you're going out too fast.
In some bigger marathons, there's kind of so much crowding in the first 3 to maybe 5 miles that there is sort of like a natural kind of slowdown unless you spend a lot of effort, you know, weaving around people to pass people. So maybe if that's the case, just kind of, you know, go with the flow and just try to relax into that instead of spending a lot of energy weaving around the course, trying to get up, and because you're going to have a lot of energy, but don't spend it trying to pass a bunch of people in the first 3 miles. You need to save that for the end.
So I get a lot of people coming up to me at the Marathon Expo because I work at the Pacer tent and the Pacer booth. And they say, is it going to be congested at the start? How do I get on pace? And I say, yes, it's going to be congested on the start. Don't worry about it. See that as a good thing. Hmm. You know, yeah, it might add 20, maybe 30 seconds per mile to your time for the first 3-4 miles until you get into Brooklyn. But use that to your advantage because it guarantees that you're not going to go out too fast. And if you add, let's say, 20 seconds per mile over the first 4 miles, that's 80 seconds that you've got to chip away in the next 22 miles. It's like 3.5 seconds per mile. That's completely manageable, right?
Yeah.
And so I think one of the other questions that one of the MTA members posed was, you know, if I'm off pace sometime in the race, you know, how do I adjust my pace, right? So maybe you're behind in that example by a minute, maybe 2 minutes, and you want to get back some of that time to finish under your goal pace. You know, my honest answer is you take as much as the course as possible to chip away those seconds that you're behind. So if you're 3 minutes behind at mile 6, you take 20 miles to chip away at 3 minutes, right? Which is 180 seconds, which is 9 seconds per mile. What you don't want to do is chip away 1 minute the next mile, 1 minute the next mile, and 1 minute the next mile, so that, yeah, you're at mile 9 and you're back on pace, but you may have just PR'd at the 5K. Right.
So you have to look at the long game as
look
opposed
at the long game.
To just get, let me get caught up right now.
That's really smart.
Yeah. You know, keep your cool. I mean, there's a long road ahead of you. There's so much time to, you know, there's so many areas to make it up that you can't panic. Keep your cool and use as much as the runway as you can.
That reminds me of this question from Kathleen about executing on the downhills.
Great question.
How do you pace yourself going up and down hills during a marathon?
Well, you go slow around the uphills and fast around the downhills. But, you know, we kind of laugh about that, but a lot of people don't. I had someone who ran New York City in 2013, and he said, I'm just going to keep an even pace every mile. And I'm like, but some miles are straight uphill. It's like, that's fine. I'll recover on the downhills. And that's not how it works.
No.
The unfortunate truth is that you're never going to make up the time on the downhills that you lose on the uphills. You know, So over the course of 26.2 miles, a course with a lot of rolling hills will be a little bit slower than a course like Chicago, which is completely flat, right? That's just the nature of the beast. Accept it. So you probably can gain about 70 to 80% of your time back on the downhills. So when you're going on the uphill, relax a little bit. Don't worry about slowing down. Everyone slows down. The pros slow down, okay? And what you want to do is you want to focus on your effort. So if your effort level is at a 7 on the flats and you hit this big uphill, you want to make sure that you're working at, you know, a 7 out of 10 effort level going up that hill. Okay? Don't worry about the pace. And then similarly, when it goes back downhill, you want to keep that effort level the same. Don't start sprinting. Don't take it too easy. Keep that effort level the same. And it'll balance out as much as it can that way. But whatever you do, don't charge the uphills because you'll really shred your legs.
Yeah, that's a good point. And ideally, you know, if a person knows what marathon they're going to be running a long time in advance, which it's good to be training for the marathon course that you'll be running. So incorporating maybe some rolling hills into your long runs where you can practice keeping that pace or the fluctuations that will happen on those type of courses. What about people who, you know, there's a lot of popularity of these downhill marathon courses now. They think, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. The whole marathon has this downhill grade, and I'm just going to fly on the downhills. You know, this is going to be amazing.
Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, those can be really tough on your quads. A lot of people who don't do a lot of eccentric exercises with their quads can be walking really funny for the next, like, 3 or 4 days after those races. I like to say that, you know, running uphill is about fitness and running downhill is about technique. And, you know, if you end up doing a lot of those downhill runs, you really have to work on your technique. And that's a really hard thing to do alone. You know, I was working with someone who ran the St. George Marathon back in October. And it wasn't until his wife showed him video of him running that he realized how poor his downhill technique was.
Hmm.
And he'd been running for quite a bit. I mean, he'd been training specifically for this downhill St. George Marathon. So if you do one of those marathons, and they can be very, very fast, I would really advise you to work with someone who can help you work with your downhill technique and even, you know, look at you and see, are you, you know, leading with the hips and not, you know, breaking with every step that you go.
Because that's going to increase the soreness. If you're breaking, overstriding and breaking with every step, yeah, you are going to be trashed by the end. And I've seen some people in those kind of downhill races, you know, they're flying, and suddenly they just, their legs don't have anything more. So yeah, train for the course that you're going to be trying to get your PR on, because it does make a difference.
Honestly, those courses, like, they intrigue me, but they terrify me at the same time.
It's like, what's your excuse? It was downhill.
So let's talk about the latter miles of a race, which is probably the hardest for most people. Jody from the Academy, she says, the last 10K still owns me, regardless of my pace. I'd love to be consistent enough to push through strong. And people ask about hitting the wall and how come it's so hard to run a negative split. So that's where the mental toughness sure plays a big part, right?
Yeah, you know, mental toughness is a legit thing when it comes to pacing, getting through the wall. But it also begs the question a little bit of, did you pace yourself properly the first half? A lot of people who hit the wall, myself included, I've made these mistakes before, have been due to going out a little bit too hot in the first half. So sometimes that wall comes up not because of mental weakness, but because, you know, your legs just are, I mean, they're just done, they're toast. And sometimes you've just got to be prepared for that. One of the things I tell my clients is the last 10K are never easy. And you can't expect to run the first 20 miles and then get to the last 10K and be like, oh, it's only 10K, this is great, I feel great, I'm done. You know, you've got to prepare yourself to accept the fact that the last 10K are going to be hard. And just because they're hard doesn't mean that you failed. It means that you're running a marathon.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
everyone around you is probably suffering as well.
Yeah, that's just a part of the package. Those guys who negative split, who look like they're feeling great, they're feeling just as bad. So you just have to accept that and find a way, find whatever that your mantra is, whatever your internal motivator is, to keep on running those last 10K. And I think it was it Peter who said something about, you know, I can't stop during a race because anytime I stop, I can't start again. Don't stop. Like, do not stop. For two reasons. One, your body will tend to, like, you know, tighten up, especially around the hips. And when the hips get tight, it's, like, really hard to start moving again. But second, you've already allowed yourself to stop. And from a mental, psychological perspective, you're starting to give up a little bit. And you can't focus on that. You can't focus on the stopping. You have to keep on thinking, it's okay that I'm hurting. I just have to keep going. And you shouldn't focus on the pain. You should focus on the finish line.
Right.
You know, visualize that finish line. You know, accept that the last 10K are going to be hard. You know, yes, this is the hard part of the race, but this is what I've trained for. And this is how I get to the finish line. I'm not going to get to the finish line without feeling this.
Honestly, often it hurts just as much to walk in that final 10K as it does to run. So a lot of times you slip into that, well, I'll just walk for a while and make me feel better. Then you're battling, should I slow down even more? So yeah, your mind, there's definitely that battle. And probably working on a lot of those mantras in your training is going to be really helpful, because you can't expect to just show up on race day and suddenly be like, okay, now I'm mentally strong, unless you've been preparing your mental strength and working with mantras, you know, in your training, perhaps.
Yeah. And it's something that an old coach of mine used to say, there's a million reasons to give up in the middle of a marathon. You need to find the one reason that keeps you moving forward. So with everyone that I work with before the marathon, well before the marathon, I say, spend some quiet time, find that one reason that's going to keep you going forward, you know, so that when it gets tough, you know exactly what to call on.
Yes. I mean, I know in different marathons, sometimes that will shift. What starts out as my one reason to keep going, I'm like, oh, I don't really care, but I really feel like beer at the finish line. Or ice cream. It's like, I will run for ice cream.
And just like, I want to get there before all the good food is gone.
So even like silly little things, you know, anything to keep your mind focused on moving forward, staying strong in that mile and keeping that finish line in your focus is helpful.
I had a friend who ran the JFK 50 miler, I think it was 2014, and he had a goal, a pretty ambitious goal of under 9.5 hours.
Wow.
And at around mile 42, it gets kind of like rolling hills for the last 8 miles, which is not what you want in a 50 miler. And he just threw his hands up and was like, whatever, I don't even care about the goal. I'm just going to walk these hills. But he was so sick and tired of being out on the course for so long. He's like, screw it. I'm just going to run it. I need to be done. I don't even care. I'm so mad at these hills that I'm going to get to the finish line. And he ended up under 9.5 hours because he was so sick of being out on the course. He just needed to be done. So it's like, hey, whatever gets you to the finish line.
Exactly. I've been in some marathons where I was so cold. Like, if I stop to walk, I'm going to be even colder. So I just have to keep running. Like you said, get this race over with. Just get so I can change clothes out of these sweaty clothes.
It's called the underdressed strategy.
Yes. Keep running. Just avoid hypothermia.
So I'm curious, as a pacer, Steve, are you like having to give people lots of encouragement during the latter part, like maybe after mile 20? And what's that like?
Yeah, so that's actually a pretty big part of pacing for the New York City Marathon. They really want us to encourage the runners. And one of the ways I do that is I tell them what's ahead. So it's okay if we have a slow mile, because this one's going to be, there are a couple turns in this mile. We might, you know, lose a few seconds here. There might be a small uphill. So it's okay if we're 5 or 10 seconds fast. Don't worry, guys, we'll get this back. You know, you're doing great. We're right on pace, you know, and I'll tell them every probably 5 or 10K exactly what the split we should be at and where we are, because that's sort of like constant motivation and reinforcement of, yes, we're right on pace. Yes, we can do this. You know, stick with me is one of the best ways to keep the group together. And when a group comes together like that, the motivation is to keep the group together. It becomes less about, you know, I want to run this thing. It really has this herd mentality and everyone comes along so well.
Do you find a better success rate for people who really kind of stick tight into their pacer? And so they're hearing that feedback, they're participating, they feel like they have more membership in the group, whereas someone who's just kind of tailing in the back, it feels like, you know, it's easier for them just to kind of drop off the group.
I think everyone's a little bit different. Some people definitely want to be like really, really close. The people who don't do well are the people who always run about 2 feet ahead of me.
Ah, interesting. Mm.
Because every single year, there's always a few people who do that. And the reason I think that it doesn't work is that every quarter mile or so, they always end up looking back. So they're always kind of like adjusting their pace, they're second guessing their pace, they're thinking too much. And it's probably just wasting a lot of their energy looking back, looking over the shoulder, making sure that we're there. So if you ever do run with the pace group, don't run in front, because A, if your pace is a little bit off, you're going to get trampled by about 100 people.
Right. And that can be totally disillusioning. Like, oh, there they go.
Yeah, that's not going to be the race experience you wanted. But the other thing is, you don't, the greatest thing about running with a pace group is that you can shut your brain off, you know, so shut your brain off. Don't run in front, run behind them, run to the side and just enjoy the race.
This is good stuff. I find myself when I'm trying to stay on a certain pace, and let's say I'm not in a pace group, constantly looking down at my watch every quarter mile or even less. How often do you glance down at your watch?
When I'm pacing, I glance down at my watch probably every quarter mile. I've got to be so metronomic, you know, with my approach to pacing. When I race, I don't look down except for every mile just to capture the mile split. Mm-hmm. That'll change at about mile 23 when I look down about every 20 seconds, and I'm like, oh my God, it's only been a tenth of a mile. I thought that was a half mile.
Exactly.
So running with a pace group can help you stop over monitoring maybe your pace. And some people find, and we got a question in the group from Gregory, that he said he's awful at pacing, and he's wondering how much should one rely on the Garmin or whatever device they're using for pacing. He said in a local run group that they have, there was 3 Garmins and they were all over the place as far as different paces.
Have you found that to be true? Like your watch is off from your actual chip time?
Oh yeah, totally. So, you know, one of the first things that I experienced during the marathon is, especially later in the race, right? You see the mile 20 marker coming up and maybe it's 300-400 feet and everyone's watch is like beeping around you.
Right.
And it's like, we're not even there yet, guys. Like, come on. It's because their watches are all set to auto lap. So the first thing I do, whether I'm racing, especially when I'm pacing, is I turn auto lap off.
Okay. Interesting.
Because it's not like at a certain point in the marathon, my Garmin's going to read 26.2 miles and the finish line might be a quarter mile away. I'm not going to stop and be like, guys, I just finished the marathon. Like, give me my medal. It's like, no, the finish line is still out there.
Right.
Right. So what I do is I turn off auto lap and I essentially just use my Garmin as like an old Timex. And I just get manual splits every single lap, you know, and I know what my pace should be. So I know if that's a couple seconds fast or a couple seconds slow. But I try to get away from the crutch of the Garmin, right? I try to listen to my body to make sure that the pace feels good. And then I just back up that data by getting a mile split every time I pass the physical mile marker.
Yeah, that's really smart, because we've had a lot of questions from people. You know, they finish their marathon and they're like, what's the deal? You know, my Garmin is showing 27.1 miles and it must be off. And they don't realize that each piece of technology has a slightly different metric that it's using to track the miles. And the marathon course should be USATF certified course. And so it's what's on, you know, following the tangent and everything. And during the course of a race, you do a lot of
weaving
around.
Yeah.
So that's totally normal for people. I think pace groups can be amazing, especially bigger marathons. I think they're really reliable. Unfortunately, I've ran in some where I decided I was going to stick with a pace group and found that the pacers were like all over the place. I remember the Indianapolis Monumental Marathon, and I don't remember which group I was running with, but we were doing great. We got to mile 11, and then one of the pacers disappeared into the porta pots and said, I'll catch up. And then, like, by mile 13, the other pacer was completely gone. And it was just like they had just, like, evaporated. I didn't go in mentally preparing to, like, pace myself. And so I was just, like, really defeated at that point. I thought, like, oh, my goodness, you know, I was just going to rely on these people. Pacing groups can be awesome. You know, sign up with one. But also, ultimately, you're responsible for pacing your own race. And so make sure that it doesn't come as a shock to you if your pacers disappear. And another thing is they're not going to wait for you if you have to stop and use the bathroom, if you have to stop and tie your shoe. I mean, the pace group goes on. And so you have to be mentally prepared to be able to get yourself back on pace to catch up with the group if that's your goal, or to, you know, continue pacing your own marathon.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things I tell people is that, especially my clients where they're doing races, and I don't know what the pace team is like.
Right.
About half the time they think about, yeah, I'm going to start off with the pace team, see how things go, maybe pick it up the second half. But I tell them, you have to see what the pace team is doing. Are they good? Are they bad? Because sometimes they do start off a little bit too fast or a little bit too slow. And, you know, you can't put all your trust in them because they're still human and they're still fallible.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So you have to make the judgment call whether, once you start with them, if you're going to stick with them. And it's okay just to run your own race. And you should be prepared to make that decision.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So definitely. Give us an idea of, like, how do you qualify to be a pacer at the New York City Marathon?
Ooh, I think that these days it's actually pretty strict. I think that you have to have actually run the marathon itself a few times. Mm-hmm. You have to have some sort of demonstrable ability to maintain a pace over time, right? So I think they want to see that your PRs are roughly even splits over the course of the marathon.
Okay.
And they generally ask that your PR be about 30 minutes faster than the pace that you're running.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because you have to be comfortable enough to hold that pace, talk, and, you know, encourage people. Yeah. You can't be given 100% effort out there.
So do you get a free entry?
Yeah, we get free entry, which is great.
Any other perks, like your own private porta potty or anything?
Yeah, well, they give us a private bus in the morning to take us out to the start. And then there's a private tent in the morning, which has Gatorade, bagels, it's got fruit, it's got coffee, and its own porta potties.
Right.
And best of all, on the morning, it's got a heated tent. So it's usually really cold in Staten Island. People are shivering just a little bit, and it's kind of nice just to not be shivering.
That's right.
That's awesome.
So people who do like a run walk pace, this is one thing we haven't addressed. A couple people asked about that. Are they even really a candidate to use a pacing group? I mean, I know some of the slower pacing groups, like maybe the 6 hour, 6:30s, do throw in some run walk intervals. So would that be something like the day before at the expo to talk to them to see what
Yes.
their strategy is going to be, if that's going to work for you?
100%. Yeah, you should definitely always go to the expo. And I say this even for the faster runners, like the 3 hour, 3.5 hour runners. Figure out what the strategy of the pacer is going to be. So, you know, for a course like New York, can be very congested at the start, which can be a very anxious thing for a very fast runner, right? What's the pacer strategy to chip off the time? And then for the potential run-walk candidates, right, the 5.5, 6 hour groups, you should definitely find out what intervals they're using. You know, are you using like a 90-30? It's usually going to be a 3 or 4 to 1, but how long are they? Right. Try and talk to the pacer at the expo. And if you can't, talk to the pacer that morning. Say,
sure.
What's your approach going to be today? Because even if they're not 100% on what your plan is for that day, you can still run with them. And you're going to be doing some leapfrogging through the race. And that's fine, because you're going to keep them in sight at least half the time. And as long as you get to the finish together, that's all that matters.
Good point. Yeah. Do you recommend that people get those like pacing tattoos, you know, where they put on their arm? what do you see the success rate with those being?
So I prefer the paper wristbands.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can rip them off if you're off pace.
There's no commitment. I've seen some pace groups, they give out like a separate bib to put on the back of your shirt to commit to the group.
And Chicago then, does that, yeah.
Yeah, and then that can be like you're really on the line. You know, like, I've seen people like trying to unpin them later because obviously things are not going well.
It's like, get this thing off me. Yeah, maybe I'm just afraid of commitment, but I think the tattoo is a little bit much. Because if you get off pace, I think it would just be a reminder of that I'm off pace. And then it does you no good. What I do tell some people at New York is that wear a couple different pace bands, maybe an A-goal and a B-goal on different arms, and maybe start with your B-goal. And if you can speed up at a certain point and you're on your A-goal, you can rip off your B-goal and start going off of your A-goal pace band.
Yeah, good suggestion.
So anything else as we were thinking about this that people might be struggling with when it comes to pacing? I know we covered a lot of good things already.
What if there's a person listening and they just are now realizing that they probably picked too aggressive of a training plan? You know, maybe they just kind of thought, yeah, I want to run a sub-4. You know, this is my first marathon. Maybe I've run a sub-2-hour half marathon. This should be totally doable. You know, how does a person adjust midstream? Maybe they're halfway through their training plan. They're really struggling with the paces on it, but they feel like it's a failure to set a different, maybe a slower goal. What would you say to a person like that?
That's a great question. And I think it's important you use the word failure, right? No one training for a marathon is a failure. Marathon training plans and goals are specific and unique to the individual. So it's your marathon training goal and your plan, and it's your race. You know, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to someone else or their plan or their race. You know, you really have to find out what your fit is and, you know, what your talents are and what your abilities are. I think that we as people tend to get like competitive with ourselves and around these arbitrary numbers, like 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally nothing special about a 4-hour marathon.
Right.
It's just a round number, you know.
It's just people have attached significance to it, and that's why
exactly.
It's special.
But you see these spikes in, you know, like 4-hour, like 3:59 finishing time, and it like goes down at 4:01, and it's like we attach these these significance to arbitrary numbers. But really the important thing is to, you know, sit yourself down and say, you know, what's the best realistic goal for me? Because the worst thing that's going to happen is if you overcommit to a goal in your training and it's just not sustainable in the racing. Because I can forgive someone for having poor training or for making a few mistakes along the way in training, because you can learn a lot in training, but you've got one chance racing, right?
Yeah.
And you want to make that the best experience that you can. And especially if it's your first marathon, you want that experience to be as positive and as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah, you want to cross that finish line feeling proud of yourself and not walking away with, you know, feeling like a failure because you didn't reach some arbitrary number. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah, glad we said that. So I guess one final question, Steve, you crossed the finish line with exactly 1 second margin, which is amazing. You finished in 3:29:29. And you're a 3:30 pacer, so pretty exact. It's amazing. Looking back, what else did you do right?
What else did I do right? Well, a couple of the things I think we talked about before. So it's an 8-minute pace. It's a 3:30 marathon, right?
Yeah.
So my first mile was 8:50 because it's uphill and it's congested on the bridge in New York City. So I had to think, how do I chip off these 50 seconds that I just added onto everyone's marathon time? And I was like, I'm going to chip them off over the next 10 miles. I'm just going to do 5 seconds a mile so that by the time we're just before the halfway mark, we can settle into a good groove that we can just maintain the rest of the race. Because good pacing is really about rhythm. You know, you want to get into like a very even, sustainable rhythm. So that was definitely one of the things that I think helped the pace team that I was with hit their goals. Settle into a good rhythm in the second half. And the other thing was to just like slowly chip away some of the time that I added during the first mile because of the uphill. The other thing is very similar is, well, I guess it's the same thing. It's just there are a couple of hills throughout the course. And it was talking to my runners saying, okay, this next mile is going to be a little bit slow because we're going over a hill. Don't worry, we'll make it over the course of the next 2 or 3 miles. So communicating with my runners, we had very even splits for the first half and second half. The first half and the second half had a difference of only 3 seconds.
Wow.
That's like Meb Keflezighi precision right there.
Not quite Des Linden perfection. I think he's perfectly split two marathons, which
wow.
is...
That's amazing.
Which is...
Phenomenal.
That's out of this world.
That's like for golf, that's like hitting a hole in one, you know, 18 holes. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, pretty much.
Really good stuff, Steve. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and expertise. Any more races for you this year?
I was going to do a race this Saturday. It was the North Face Endurance Challenge 50-mile championships.
And that was canceled.
Canceled due to wildfire.
Athena was supposed to be there, too.
Yeah, I had had about six of my friends coming out from New York to do this. But the race is doing a great thing. They're donating all $30,000 in prize funds to the victims of the Kemp wildfire in Northern California.
Wow.
And I think they're donating as many of the race resources as possible. So they're doing the right thing. They're giving all the runners a comped entry into one of their other races, which is great. So it's a bad situation that they have turned into a good opportunity. So
yeah.
I'm happy to not be racing it.
Right. 50 miles of smoke in your lungs is not ideal.
You gotta be careful. Appreciate you being on the podcast again, Steve.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, have a great day.
All right, man. Cheers.
All right. Well, we want to take a minute and talk to you guys about knee pain and how you can put the smack down on runner's knee. The holidays are here.
Or almost here.
Well, you know, it's not even Thanksgiving yet, and people already have their Christmas trees up in our neighborhood. Angie's like, we need to buy a tree now.
Love my trees.
It's a great time to recover from a long running season and take care of those little issues that have come up. Now's a great time to recover, to rehab, and to prepare for a healthy 2019 training season. And we're so happy to tell you about New Knee. It's an innovative new product designed to provide immediate relief of runner's knee, because knee pain really, really sucks.
Yes, it does. The New Knee was invented by two-time Ironman Mike Emmerling, and it's a result of his own five-year struggle with runner's knee. He was unable to find relief from other remedies, so he came up with his own solution. And it's so effective that even Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas is using it to stay fit and active. New Knee has also been five-star rated by running injury specialist Dr. Ben Chateau, who we've had on the podcast in the past. New Knee is not like other compression-based knee sleeves and supports. In fact, research reveals that pressure relief, not compression, is the key to relief of runner's knee symptoms. By relieving the pressure on your patella or your kneecap, New Knee can provide immediate relief of runner's knee pain.
So don't let knee pain slow you down. Just go to newkneeshop.com to check it out. You can use the code MTA30 for a 30% discount. That's newknee, N-U-N-E-E, shop.com, and use the code MTA30.
We'd also like to thank this episode's sponsor, Audible. It's the time of the year when everyone is thinking about thoughtful gifts. And so think about giving yourself or a loved one the gift of an Audible membership. You can get access to unbeatable selections of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. You can choose three titles every month, one audiobook, and two Audible originals that you can't hear anywhere else. You can listen on any device, anytime, anywhere, at home, while you're running, on your commute, or wherever you go.
Take it from Angie. She's an audiobook junkie.
Guilty.
She usually has an earbud in one ear, so I only get half of her attention when I talk to her.
Sometimes that's true.
So right now, for limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Give yourself the gift of listening, and while you're at it, think about giving the gift of Audible to someone on your list. For more, go to audible.com/MTA or text MTA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MTA or text MTA to 500-500. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about smart pacing. Thanks to all the amazing Academy members who sent in questions. And thanks again, Coach Steve, for sharing his knowledge and expertise with the community. And speaking of pacing, we have a quick tip for you in this episode. Angie, what is a slick and inexpensive way to carry your mile splits on your arm in a marathon?
Many people like to use pace bands, and we actually referred to this in our interview with Coach Steve. We talked about there's pace tattoos that you can get, and he said, you know, that might be a little more commitment than you want, but the pace bands can be a great idea because you can wear a couple different ones if you're kind of waffling between two different finishing times, or you can just have the one. And there are many different companies that provide these pace bands. You can get them for marathon, half marathon, in distances, you know, down to 5K, also in kilometer splits. So these things can be a great tool to help you stay on pace if you choose not to run with a pacing group during your race. And even if you do choose to run with a pacing group, like we talked about in the interview, it's a great idea to be prepared to pace yourself in case something happens.
So you can look down at your wrist and instantly see what time you're supposed to be at what mile, you know, what we call the mile splits. it's easier than trying to keep it all straight in your head. Like Angie mentioned, there's a couple companies that do pace bands. Some of them are like, you know, $7 or $8 and they ship it to you. Some are free. You just print them off at home. Like for example, runbundle.com. Also, there's a site called racestoremember.com where you can even put like customized messages on your pace band. And there's different variables depending on what the course is like. If it's hilly and there, you know, that split's going to be longer. And they also, Angie, have something called grace bands. Have you ever heard of grace bands?
I haven't.
It's if you want to dedicate a mile to, you know, a person, or if you want to like have a different mantra or motivational, you know, short motivational saying every mile, you can look down at your wrist.
What a great idea.
And they also have mantra bands. So if you have like one just big running mantra that you want to remember every time you look down at your hands, I guess that's where that comes in handy. So Angie and I don't really use pace bands, but I know that a lot of runners do. So we thought we'd just throw that out there to you guys. Check it out if you're interested in knowing what your mile splits are at a glance. And we'll have links to some of these websites over with the show notes to this episode. You can find out more about what's going on here at MTA when you visit our website. Thanks, you guys, for being faithful listeners. It's great to be on this running journey with you. Thanks to Finn for helping sponsor this episode. It's a virtual personal assistant available 24/7. To try Finn for free, just go to finn.com/MTA. Until next time, guys, keep taking action in your goals. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Run on my way.